Welcome to Podcast Against Antisemitism, the show that takes a deep dive into the world's oldest hatred. I'm Ellie, your host, and you can join us for new episodes every Thursday. Subscribe now at antisemitism.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts to make sure you never miss a show. You can also watch the podcast on our YouTube channel. And please consider leaving us a nice review so we can grow our listenership. It makes a big difference. My guest today is Alma Hernandez, a Jewish Mexican-American politician serving as a Democratic member of the Arizona House of Representatives for the 20th District. Representative Hernandez is tireless in her commitment to fighting anti-Semitism and played a vital role in bringing Holocaust education to Arizona's public schools. Representative Hernandez, how are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me with you today.
Thank you for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it. So, you are the first Jewish Mexican-American woman elected to the Arizona State House. You're also the youngest woman ever to be elected. What do these accomplishments mean for you, and why did you choose politics as a career?
Yeah, so obviously I think that knowing that I've hit these firsts in my life and also kind of paved the way for others. My sister actually just joined me this last election, so I'm no longer the only one. Now there are two of us, but it's been a great honor and privilege to be able to work with the community and also just be the voice for those, because there are so many people like me that exist, and I think a lot of times they are just not known of. So I am really honored to be able to be in the position that I am and, have the role that I do in the community. I think your part two of the question was, why did I choose politics? Why this career? And, very early on when I was 14, I got involved in politics, and I've just really enjoyed it ever since. I mean, it is difficult. It's one of those things that could be really amazing at times and then really difficult at others. At the end of the day, I believe that most people go into politics for the right reasons. We actually want to create change. We believe that, we could do things to improve our communities. And that's truly the main reason why I'm in this position. As I said, I got involved when I was 14 years old. So it's now been over half of my life. And it's just been a really big part of my life, right? So I actually never wanted to run for office. I always wanted to work in the behind the scenes, and I actually wanted to go to medical school. So I took a bit of a detour in my life. I did study public health, and I'm actually currently in law school right now. So I figured, I didn't go to med school, disappointed my parents quite a bit on that one, but I figured that I would still be able to do something in the community to give back and also be able to improve the issues that I was seeing that were happening.
Right. Well, look, you speak about community. You're very active in your local Jewish community, and you've even worked as the coordinator of Tucson's Jewish Community Relations Council. What is Jewish life like in Arizona?
Yeah, I think it's great. Obviously, we could have more Jews here. That would be amazing. But I will say that our community is very tight-knit. We all help each other out when there's a time of need. We are obviously much smaller in Tucson than we are in the Phoenix area, just because Phoenix is one of the largest cities in the nation. But at the end of the day, I believe that we are a very strong and really, truly a close community. And I, enjoy being a part of it. I think it's amazing. There's a lot of things that we do. There's a lot of events that we have together here in the community. And sometimes there's things that I go to Phoenix for, because, there's just not something going on here in Tucson. So I'll drive to Phoenix for it. So I would say that our community is growing. And in my opinion, it's great and it's vibrant. And I truly wish that we would have more, a larger Jewish community at some point. That would be very nice.
Yeah. Well, please God that happens. Let me ask you about some of the concerns of the Jewish community in Tucson and in Arizona more widely. We've seen some concerning reports of anti-Semitic incidents coming out of Tucson. For example, in 2021, one of the doors of the congregation Chavarim, which you belong to, was smashed with a rock. And only a few weeks later, a Chabad synagogue in the area was vandalized. The following year, in 2022, a Jewish staff member at the University of Arizona, Professor Thomas Meixner, was shot by someone, where it was later revealed they had sent a text message saying they wished death on all Jews. More recently, swastika graffiti was reported in a children's gym in Tucson. Naturally, these reports are disturbing and upsetting and concerning. How does the Jewish community where you are feel about these incidents?
Yeah. So obviously we've had several incidents happen over the years, right? It's something that was very publicly known. As you mentioned, my synagogue was vandalized just about 2 years ago. And that was really difficult because at the end of the day, you know, we don't mess with anyone. We don't get involved with other, we don't get involved in any problems or drama as a community. We really try our best to actually help others. And we were far from, you know, going and actively looking for the drama, right? So yeah, it was difficult. We all came together as a community, and I'm really proud of the Tucson greater community who came out to support us and help us to make sure that our synagogue, but also Chabad, was able to repair the damage that was done to our synagogues. So I'm really proud of that. At the end of the day, we shouldn't have to, you know, go and ask for help to repair synagogues because of damage that's being done that didn't have to be there, right? So I would say that, yes, we've had incidents here. Yes, they've been terrible. But we don't live in a community that is constantly, you know, being targeted. Like we're not in New York, we're not in LA, in certain areas where there is constantly issues, right? So although we've had our issues over the years, I believe that our community, our greatest concern truly has been security. And that's been the case for years now. And I think that's the case for a lot of Jewish communities around the country, is security for our places of worship. So for us, it's more about a security issue rather than facing like constant anti-Semitism. Of course, anti-Semitism, I feel, will always be there. Unfortunately, we have some people that they just will never change their ways. But I think at the end of the day, if we do things around education and helping educate children, which is one of the things that I worked on actually 3 years ago, was passing mandatory Holocaust education in Arizona, because I believe that at this point, we are in a point in time where the best that we could do is educating the children and the future generation so that we stop that constant trend of hate and bigotry against the Jewish community. I believe that the children are going to be the most important key parts of making sure we break that cycle. So as I said, we've had some issues happen over the years, but at the end of the day, I think our Jewish community here just wants to be able to live without fear of feeling that, you know, they can't go to services because they need security, or they can't have large gatherings of more than 10 people because we fear that we're going to have issues, right? So I think it's one of those security issues that we face just like every other Jewish community around the world.
Mm. And it's I think when people see anti-Semitic incidents happening, there's a sense of powerlessness. So what can the average citizen, Jewish or non-Jewish, do when they see these taking place? And what are the local authorities doing to prevent this from happening?
Yeah, so I will say that our Tucson police department has worked really closely now with different organizations here in the community. And they have done trainings and also just worked to identify what is seen as like an anti-Semitic incident rather than just labeled as a hate crime. Because in Arizona, for the longest time, we didn't have, there was no difference in state statute and policy that dealt with what is considered a hate crime, what is considered an anti-Semitic act, right? So we've worked on changing those laws over the years now. It happened last year. We were able to change that. We're reporting now to law enforcement. If it is something that is anti-Semitic, it would be labeled as such rather than being labeled just as a hate crime. So we've worked on policies of that sort. We've also, like I said, partnered with our local agencies and organizations to work with law enforcement. So that's been really helpful. I would say that one of the things the community is constantly asking is if people see something, they say something. At the end of the day, we can only do so much on our own. And as you mentioned, you know, having the greater community, not just Jewish community, doing something around this is what we need. I think what I always tell people are our biggest allies are those who are sometimes not even really involved in the Jewish community, who don't know a lot about the Jewish community, but they can be really great allies to us, because at the end of the day, they're the ones who could stand up for us, who can report things when they see them. So it's about building those relationships in the community. And like I said, law enforcement has done a great job here of working with our local organizations. And, you know, I'm hopeful. As I said, we've changed some laws that needed to be changed in the last few years. And I think we're going towards a really positive, I guess, way of dealing with a lot of these issues. Now they're being deemed, you know, anti-Semitic where they weren't before, if there was no clear definition.
Yeah. And I think what you said before about Holocaust education is really important. Now, like you say, in 2021, a bill that you introduced requiring Holocaust education in Arizona public schools was passed by the state legislature. This made Arizona the 16th state in the United States to make Holocaust education mandatory. That is fantastic, really well done. Can you please tell us a bit about the process of what it was like getting this bill passed, and how did you feel once you did it?
Yeah, the process was very long. It took about 3 years actually to get it done, not because it wasn't good policy and not because I was doing anything wrong. It was really politics. That's what it came down to. We had people on both sides that really were using this bill to play politics. On the right side, they wanted me to vote for things that I would never vote for, just to compromise my values, just to get this done. That just wasn't going to happen. And I got the approval from the Holocaust survivors, who I worked really closely with when we even introduced the bill. And I said, look, we can get it done this year. This is what the ask is of me. And I had many survivors who told me, we will wait as long as we need to wait so that you do what you need to do and what's right. So at the end of the day, I didn't have to compromise my values, and I didn't have to do something that I was going to feel like morally wrong for doing. And we were able to get it done, but it took 3 years. It was a long process. I worked with many organizations and stakeholders here in the state, but at the forefront of all of this were the survivors. We had three survivors that passed away, unfortunately, during the 3 years, who were very involved, but didn't get to see it happen. And that was very difficult, because I really wish that they could have all been here to be able to witness a historic moment. But because of politics, we couldn't get it done. And I'm just really grateful that we finally got it done. I'm really proud of it. I know that the schools have been implementing different curriculums. They're allowed to select the curriculum that works best for them through the Department of Education. So for me, you know, I see it as a really positive thing. Like I said, it's going to be with the children. It's going to start with the children and educating the future generation, because they are the ones that are going to be hopefully breaking the cycle of hate and bigotry in our communities.
Yeah. What was it like for you to be able to work with Holocaust survivors on this?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, I already worked with the organization locally here, because I worked for the Jewish Federation for some time after grad school. So I was really close to a lot of the survivors before I even got elected. But I did have one in particular who was a really good friend, a mentor, and was my first grade teacher. You know, she's known me since I was 7 years old. And wow. Miss Teresa Dolgoff, you know, when I heard her story, because she used to teach about the Holocaust when we were younger, when we were in elementary school, I met her. She was my brother's and sister's reading teacher as well when we were younger. And I just never forgot her story. And as I got older, we kept in touch. I found her on Facebook. You know, she had such a big impact on my life because I met her when I was so young. And we just kept in touch over the years. And then, you know, we reconnected through the Holocaust Survivors Network here in Tucson. And she was able to come testify on behalf of my bill. And that was really moving for me, having her support and knowing that she's someone who I personally have known literally my entire life now and has supported me throughout the years. Just seeing her how happy she was to finally see this done was really rewarding. And that's why we did it. You know, it had nothing to do with anybody in particular. It just had everything to do with the survivors and honoring their memories and their families' memories.
That's fantastic. That's absolutely amazing. And it's not just the Holocaust education bill that passed recently. Last year, Arizona adopted the International Definition of Antisemitism, the IHRA definition of antisemitism, and campaign against antisemitism. We were instrumental in getting the definition adopted by the British government, which was the first in the world to do so. And since then, we've been pushing for its adoption by governments, public bodies, universities, and other institutions around the world. So to see, you know, Arizona doing this, it's really, really great. What impact are you hoping that the adoption has on the state of Arizona?
Yeah. So I want to first say that I think it's amazing that you all worked on that. I mean, it's great. At the end of the day, I'm just happy that we finally got it done. Again, that was something that I started with when we did Holocaust education. I actually had two separate pieces of legislation. We had the IHRA definition, and then we had the Holocaust education bill. Unfortunately, because of politics, as I'm sure you probably know, how it's happened throughout the world, really, throughout the countries, is that politics have played a big role in getting IHRA done and getting IHRA adopted. So I started it with that same bill back when I started my Holocaust education legislation. Unfortunately, it did not go. It took two more years, and then this past year, we were able to give it to a Republican that put it under his name, and he got it done. But it was very political. It was a difficult thing because at the end of the day, we knew it was the right thing to do in our community. And unfortunately, we just couldn't get it done. We couldn't get the votes on either side. I mean, we had Republicans who didn't like it, and we had Democrats who didn't like it. And it left us in a very difficult spot. So it wasn't until last year when I gave it to a Republican that we were able to get it over the finish line. And at that point, you know, for me, it wasn't a matter of, oh, I need to have my name on this because it was my idea. It was more of, let's get it done and let's do it the right way. So for me, I was just really glad to see that it finally got done because, again, it was not easy to do. It took a while.
Yeah. It
took a lot of fighting, a lot of arguing, and then it finally got done. Yeah.
I mean, like you say, we know it's the right thing to adopt IHRA. So why do you think so many people choose to politicize it in this way?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the reasons are for specific, you know, people who just don't like it. I will say that what I got from as feedback here in Arizona was, we had Republicans who felt that it was a slippery slope and it was going to be, you know, infringement on your First Amendment freedom of speech. I disagreed with that. And then you had Republicans who also believed that we were creating like a special class for Jews, which, again, I also don't believe. And then we had Democrats who just didn't like it because some of them didn't like that it referenced Israel. And then some didn't like it because they didn't think that it was going to be, you know, supported in the progressive spaces. So it was a mix of two, right? Two different extremes of why they didn't want it. But at the end of the day, the extremes met in the middle and they were able to successfully stop it from moving forward for a few years. But like I said, we finally got it done. But I just think there's a really huge lack of understanding around IHRA, really, and then just people who just will never like it or support it regardless of what we do. I mean, we could have even watered it down really here and gotten it done that way, but I didn't want to because I wanted to make sure that it was what IHRA was intended to be. And in order to do that, we had to pass it the way that it was written. And I didn't think we should compromise or really make any changes to what was already, in my opinion, really well done. So.
Well, thank you for not doing that. And really well done to you and everyone else involved in getting this thing passed. Really, really well done. You know, while we're on the topic, let me ask you, what are your thoughts on fellow politicians who openly demonize the state of Israel with rhetoric that breaches the definition and crosses into anti-Semitism?
Yeah. I have a lot of opinions. I'm like, how honest do you want me to be? I have a lot
of opinions.
Be honest. Yeah, no, I have a lot of opinions on this, and I'm actually pretty open and direct on social media about this as well. I've never been afraid to give my opinion on some of the thoughts and I guess statements people have made when they are in politics. At the end of the day, look, as I said, I believe that most people go into politics for the right reasons. And then we have people who go into politics for other reasons. And I have a serious problem when we have politicians who don't know much about the issue, who are definitely not Middle Eastern policy experts or foreign policy experts. And who have a lot of opinions around the issues, right? So I have a big issue when people just post online just to post or share articles that are not legitimate articles. That really bothers me. And I will call anyone out. I don't care if they're a Democrat. I don't care if they're Republican. I don't care if they're a friend or I consider them a friend. At the end of the day, I think everyone needs to be held accountable for their actions. Perfect example, there's a woman who I served with at the legislature who's now running for federal office. She's seeking higher office. And she voted against all of my bills. The only one she did not vote against was the Holocaust education bill. But she voted against I had another bill on anti-Semitism reporting, and she voted against that one as well. She voted against the BDS legislation. She voted against everything you could possibly vote in support of for the Jewish community. And now she's running for federal office and she's seeking help from the Jewish community. You know, she wants the Jewish community to help her financially and help vote for her and help uplift her. And now she's trying to run as if she is someone who's pro-Israel, and I'm not having that. Absolutely not. I mean, the records of politicians speak for themselves. I think when you vote for something, regardless of how long ago that vote was, you better have an explanation on why you took it. And I'm the type of person that I always have an explanation on it. And even if someone doesn't like it, that's still my explanation. And I'm not going to change my opinion just to please people. But at the end of the day, that's a perfect example of politicians who literally will post things online, do things and say things that are like fear mongering, right, to others. And then at the end of the day, come back and ask us for help. And I do have a problem with that. I don't have respect for individuals who don't take the time to learn about the issues, but have a lot to say. And it just really bothers me. So I will always call them out, regardless of who it is.
Hey, if you want to stay up to date with the fight against anti-Semitism, why not subscribe to Campaign Against Anti-Semitism? Visit antisemitism.org/act or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube. Now, on the definition, I think it's being passed at a really, really crucial time because levels of anti-Semitism have been increasing in the past few years, with recent statistics showing that in the United States, anti-Semitism is at the highest it has been in over 40 years. What action do you think the country needs to take to combat this rise in hatred against Jews?
So I think, of course, there have been different plans that have now come up from even the White House administration with their current president. They released the, I don't know if you had a chance to look over the, sorry, my dog. they released the plan that they have moving forward, right? They listed many, many different, I forget what they were calling them. There's just many different items that they have listed that they feel would help decrease anti-Semitism and support combating anti-Semitism in our country. And I do believe that obviously when you have support on the federal level from the White House, that is really helpful. But I will say that if we are not holding people accountable for their actions, that is when people see that there is no repercussion for the way you treat people, there is no repercussion for the things you say and do, then we have a problem. So I do believe that there is a great list of items that was released by the White House recently. I think that's awesome. But at the end of the day, I think we have to do better as a society here and ensure that we're holding people accountable for their actions. And part of that is if someone is doing something, whether it's on the school campus, whether it's at a gym, as you said, for children, that it's being reported and handled appropriately. I think just saying, oh, you did wrong, is not going to cut it. I think in order to create change, sometimes you have to hold people accountable and do more than just tell them that they are wrong. So I don't know what that exactly looks like. I'm not saying put people in jail. If, you know, unless they deserve to be in jail, then yes. But I do believe that they have to have actual repercussions. For example, the beating that happened in New York with the individual, I think you probably heard about it. It was a really very well-known situation that happened in New York like 2 years ago, I believe. It looks like his the assailant only got, I forgot, it was like three or was it a year or so of not house arrest. They gave him oh goodness, it's slipping my mind. They just put him on probation. And I think that was a really big letdown to the community, because again, he almost killed this individual. This young guy was almost killed in New York. I mean, he was severely beaten just because he's Jewish. And the fact that the district attorney's office gave him, you know, what many people see as like a slap on the wrist and a, hey, all right, you did something bad, but you can go home now and you're fine. I think just shows people that, oh, he got away with it, then it's fine if we do it too. So I think there needs to be more around, I guess, that type of incident.
I want to ask more about you and your journey, because everyone's Jewish journey is different. What has yours been like?
Of course. So my journey is, yes, of course, very different than others. my mother is actually an immigrant from Mexico. She moved here when she was about 33 when she met my father. My father's from California. He grew up on a farm there, military family. My father's family and him, they're Catholic. And my mom's side of the family, they were Mexican Jews who converted to Catholicism. So at the end of the day, for me, life growing up has been very different than most people. And I say that because growing up, we knew, you know, when we were younger, that my mom's father and his side of the family, they were Mexican Jews. They changed their last name from from Cohen to Quiñones, just so that they could fit into, to society there. And they never really talked about, you know, their Jewish background and all of that, because they wanted just to be like everybody else. And we knew that growing up. And for me, it was always kind of difficult to understand why they would have to. I mean, I'm so open about like my life, and I can't imagine not being able to like practice Judaism and not being able to do what I want. I just couldn't imagine that life and growing up that way. So, you know, after I got to high school, and by the way, I'm one of three, so I'm the baby in the family. I have a sister who's a year older, and then I have a brother, and we're all in politics together. We do everything as a family together. And, you know, I just felt more connected to Judaism than I did to anything else since I was in high school. Part of the reason was because in politics, a lot of the people that I worked with were Jewish. And a lot of the individuals that, you know, I became friends with over the years since I was young were Jewish as well. And we didn't go to the same schools. I went to different schools. But I always told my parents, I want to go to synagogue. And they were like, okay, if you want to do that, like, sure, we'll go. And we found a synagogue here in town that we really loved, and we loved the rabbi there. And, you know, this was like me being like 14 years old and being a rebel and like, I'm going to just do what I want to do. But then they fully supported it. So it wasn't really me being in my rebellious state. And yeah, so it started when I was in high school, and I, decided after like a year or two of, you know, just being a part of the community there that I wanted to go through a conversion process. And I did. And this was almost, I would say, almost 10 years ago since I did that. And for me, it wasn't because, you know, 15-year-old Alma was thinking ahead of like, oh, I want to get married and I needed to hurry up and do this. Like, it had nothing to do with anyone else but myself, and something that was very personal to me. So my journey, yes, of course, was very different, very, I guess, unique in the sense that I already felt like, I never felt that I wasn't a part of the community, because even in high school, you know, my mom, there was a program that still is around. It's a really great program here in Arizona. And people always, you know, are like surprised to hear about it, but it's the Jewish Latino Teen Coalition. And it's a coalition of high school students who are Jewish and Latino. And they bring them together and they teach each other about, you know, their community and their culture. And they just, it's a way to bring, we have such a diverse community here, mainly because we're so close to the border. And I think a lot of people just hear like, oh, Hispanic or Mexican Jews, like we didn't know that was a thing. And I'm like, oh no, there's a lot, like they exist, right? So we had this organization, my mom had my sister do the program when we were in high school, and we just felt like we were a part of the community. And, you know, we never felt that we weren't, but we just obviously did things differently. So I decided to go through my process. What I went through, like the naming ceremony, we did the conversion. Then I just had the bright idea when I was like 20, that I wanted to have my bat mitzvah. And I was like, you know what? I want to do this, because at that point, if I ever do have children, I never want them to give me an excuse that they don't want to do it. So I ended up thinking, took me about 2 years studying, to be honest, just because I was so busy with life and everything else. And that was just one of my greatest accomplishments, was being able to get it done. And what was supposed to be a like small intimate family party turned into like a huge celebration of like 300 people. And I'm like, what? Like, it was supposed to be a very private thing. But yeah, so that was just my journey. And kind of like, you know, we, like I said, we do everything as a family together. My sister also went through her process, and my parents did not, but they still feel very connected. Like my mom, we go to everything together. We celebrate all the holidays and all the festivals. Like we do everything, literally as a family, we do everything together. I joke that I'm still not a very good cook, so I do the cleaning, but my brother does the cooking. So anytime it's like, whether it's, you know, Passover or we have, whether it's like a Seder, we have a Shabbat dinner, like we all as a family do everything together as one. But again, we add our Mexican twist to everything because that's just our family and who we are. And yeah, so, you know, my family is very unique in the sense of we are all very supportive of each other. And thankfully, I have parents that have always supported everything that we do, and that are very proud of everything that we do. So it's really nice to have that support, because I have met other individuals who have not had that family unit that we have. And again, for me, I always tell people, I didn't feel like, oh, you know, Alma had a conversion. It was more of like Alma coming back to her roots. And that's kind of how I saw that. My Hebrew name is Malka, but we use the M for my mother's great-grandmother. Her name was Mercedes, and then her mother was Librada, which means liberated. So my mom's great-great-grandmother's name was Librada, which in English translates to liberated. So we always joked that because we are very special and I'm just a different person, the rabbi said, you can be Malka Librada, which means queen of liberation. And that's just kind of been like our joke of like, it's not an official thing, but to me it is. And so for me, it was a very special thing of coming back to my roots and honoring my mom's family, just because, again, they weren't able to do the things that I'm so fortunate to be able to do. And that is the reason why I'm like such a strong Zionist, why, you know, I'm constantly saying things and doing things for the community, because I'm so fortunate to be able to be so loud and proud of it when my mother's family could not. And that for me is it's very personal. So yeah, my journey is very different from most people, and it's just very unique. So yeah, it's a different story.
It certainly is. And thank you very much for sharing it. I love the fact that your idea as a 14-year-old of rebelling is going to synagogue, when most Jewish 14-year-olds' idea of rebelling is not going to synagogue.
Yeah, it was, it required, you know, my parents taking me and driving me everywhere I wanted to go. So that was always fun. But yep.
God, they sound incredibly supportive. So that's really nice to hear. Now, as we begin to wind down, I'm going to ask you a question that I ask all of our guests, which is, if someone who is not Jewish approaches you and says that they want to help in the fight against anti-Semitism, where should they start?
Yeah, I think the first thing that I always tell people, because I get this question all the time, actually, from people who are in my district who are not Jewish, who say, what can we do to be helpful? It's a really great question, because I think what I believe is helpful may not be what's helpful to others, right? So my big thing has always been, show up for us, not just when we need you, right? And the same goes for us. Like, we shouldn't just show up to a community and show our support and solidarity just when something's wrong. We should be building those relationships and showing up when it matters, but also showing up when it doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, our biggest allies, like I said, are the people who are not Jewish. The people who don't really know a lot about our community but want to learn. So when people ask me, what can I do to be helpful? I always tell them, take the time to learn about our community. Come over. One of the biggest things that I've done over the years, and truly our family, and we encourage other families to do it in the area, is invite someone over for dinner. Invite someone for Shabbat dinner. I mean, you wouldn't even imagine how different it's so easy to hate someone you don't know, and you don't know anything of or about. But it's much more difficult to hate someone when you know them personally and you know their families. And I always tell people, whether it's in politics and the work that you do, or regardless of what you do in life, spending the time to get to know someone on a personal level makes such a big difference. So when people reach out of how they can be helpful, I'm like, hey, like, we're going to have this event, or we're going to do this thing. Stop by. We'd love to have you there. Because I think that's how you build those relationships, where I'm not calling my neighbor down the street because someone, you know, vandalized my car, because my license plate actually does say Zionist on it. or, you know, that the door of my synagogue was vandalized. Like, I shouldn't just have to run and call people or ask for help when we're in desperate need. We should be able to have those conversations and, like, support each other, even when there is no need, when it's just building community, right? So my biggest thing when people ask that is, like, truly, like, get to know us, like, get to understand a little bit about our community. Don't make assumptions. I actually have a neighbor two houses down who recently knocked on my door. I travel a lot, so I'm not always home, but everyone knows where I live. So she knocked on my door, and I saw her through my Ring camera, and I'm like, oh goodness, like, what does she want? I went outside, and she's like, hey, you know, I was at the store. She went to a thrift shop here. She said, I went to a thrift shop, and I found this little thing, and I thought of you. I know it's like something Jewish, and I just wanted to give it to you. And I was like, oh, and it was a tiny little mezuzah. I don't know whose it was, or which, like, I couldn't even read anything on it. It was so old. Like, it's definitely something that's like super, super old and looks really cool. But she came to deliver it. She's like, I don't really know what this means or what it is, but I wanted you to have it. And I was like, that's really nice of you. Like, thank you for thinking of me. And it wasn't until like a week later, when I was walking down to get my mail, I was at the mailbox, and she told me that she had recently read an article that I published on the newspaper talking about how you can be a progressive and a Zionist. And she's like, I'm not Jewish. I don't know anything about Judaism or Israel, really. But she said, until I read your article, I had a really negative thought of Israel because of the things I see on the media. And I was like, oh, like, first she gave me the little gift, and then now she's asking, you know, she feels comfortable enough to ask me these questions. And we had a whole long discussion outside by the mailbox in like 100-degree weather. talking about Israel, talking about Israel, but it, those are the type of things that I think that are helpful to us, is being open and being able to have these conversations with people, even if they don't agree with you. Like, I don't know, at the end, I don't really know where we ended that conversation. I thought it ended positive, but at the end of the day, I wouldn't be able to do that if, you know, if I didn't open the door for my neighbor who was knocking, right? Or see her at the mailbox and have a conversation like normal human beings that we are. And so I always tell people, I encourage everyone to do their best to just be kind to others and truly just get to know us. That's like number one. There is nothing more exciting and awesome to see in people's faces when you invite them to a Shabbat dinner and they've never been to one. It's like life-changing for them. I swear, I'm not kidding. They always say, you know, breaking bread with people is probably like the best way to like get over like an awkward situation. That is so true. And I always tell people, like, if you can accommodate even one person a meal per week at your home, do it. Like, there is no reason, you know, there's no reason not to, truly. But then that opens up the door for us to be able to work together as a community and get to know each other.
I think that's fantastic. I really, really enjoyed that story. Representative Hernandez, please tell our listeners, what have you got going on? What have you got coming up? And where can people find you?
Yeah, so I have a lot going on. I'm actually going into my second year of law school now, so it's going to be a little crazy. But that just means that I get to add more work to my plate starting in August again. I'm starting to work now and reach out to organizations to see what legislation we can work on together and push for this upcoming legislative session. So that's starting really soon. I'm also doing a lot of work right now with ICC, which is the Israel Campus Coalition. And we're trying to work with students as you've worked, you know, done work with college students and doing work with college students around the country to ensure that we're combating anti-Semitism, but also all of this hate that we're seeing on campuses. So I'm really working hard around those efforts right now. And truly, you know, election season's coming up, so it's always a really tough time because not only do people show their true colors and start acting a little crazy when it comes to the Jewish community, we start seeing an increase in hate and anger towards our community during election season, which is really interesting by politicians. But just kind of getting ready and geared up for that is something that I'm working on right now. I'm very easy to get a hold of when it comes to social media. If people write to me with questions, I usually respond pretty quickly, whether it's on Twitter or Instagram. I don't use Facebook as much, but anyone can find me at Rep A Hernandez. So, you know, I'm really excited that you're doing this and that you've, you know, interviewed. I know, I'm sure you've done a lot of interviews and worked with a lot of people, but I appreciate your time and your commitment to ensuring that, you know, we can break the cycle of anti-Semitism and the increase of hate in our community. I think we all have to do it together, whether you're in the UK or you're in Arizona. I think it's something that we all need to work on, and we could do so much better. So thank you for taking the time to do this.
It's absolutely our pleasure. And Representative Hernandez, thank you so much for coming on Podcast Against Anti-Semitism.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Podcast Against Anti-Semitism. If you did, please subscribe and leave us a nice rating, or email any feedback to podcast@antisemitism.org. Until next Thursday, stay safe.